This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
Lorena Gonzalez does not like police. She is a Seattle City Councilwoman who is one of the leading voices to defund them, and not just defund them, but fire cops on the basis of race. She's also a mayoral candidate, maybe the leading mayoral candidate, certainly one of them. Well, she pressured the Seattle Police Department to rescind an invite to a law enforcement appreciation dinner hosted by the Reverend Franklin Graham and the Ministry of Billy Graham Evangelical Association. It's supposed to happen in May. It's still happening in May. The SPD Wellness Unit last week forwarded a link to an invite to this event. There was no commentary on that email. It was just sent on April 14th. But in Seattle, you don't get to appreciate law enforcement. Not if Lorena Gonzalez has anything to do with it. She's going to get in the way in a heartbeat. She framed her concerns here over LGBTQ issues. She called out Reverend Graham's religious views as anti-gay. But like so much of what she stands for, it's contrived. Her concerns are fake. They're phony. This is about getting in the way of supporting police officers. This is about earning some additional street cred to a bunch of activists who are a little bit upset with her because she hasn't done enough in their view to abolish the police. That's all that this is about. Now, this event is free for law enforcement officers. It is not sponsored by the city. Tax dollars didn't go into this. It's an event that was supposed to offer appreciation for the work that cops do in a city where hating on police officers is a sport to not just the activist community, but to the council. Now, it's religious in nature. There's that. That's true. Just reading the invite, it says it will provide, quote, uplifting messages, encouraging and practical wisdom from God's word, live music, and fellowship with other law enforcement officers. So it sounds like if you are Christian or just looking for a free meal and some good music, you get to do this for free.
Free meal?
Yeah. You're there. Well, you got to be a cop. You don't count. Unless you're dating one and you're not. Now, this is religious in nature. Yes. Which means the Reverend Graham's religious objection to gay marriage is something that Gonzalez can feign outrage over. And so she put out a statement, which is what I do whenever I'm angry. I put out a statement to the press.
With letterhead and everything.
Yep. And I declare how angry I am. She said, by promoting this anti-LGBTQ and far-right religious group's invitation, the Seattle Police Department is undermining Seattle's LGBTQ community, alienating our own LGBTQ officers, and further eroding public trust and confidence in law enforcement to protect everyone, regardless of their religion or identity. Oof. That's a lot. That's a lot to be pretend angry about. She claimed that it's, quote, absolutely a misuse of taxpayer resources. It was literally an email that was a copy and pasted link that had just the date and the invite link. That's literally, it could not have taken, let me be generous here, 14 seconds to finish.
That's too long.
Oh, that's, you know how many pennies were spent on this? Like a half of one, maybe two. Okay. Now, she put the pressure on to the point where the interim chief, Adrian Diaz, responded by rescinding the email, claiming falsely that it raises, quote, concerns that the SPD may not be committed to the equity of our community's LGBTQ members. Really? It didn't actually do that, Chief Diaz, who I like, but he's always stuck in tough political positions because he's not going to get this job fully. He's got no shot at keeping this job permanently, right? That's why they've not made him anything more than the interim. This council would never give it to him, and the mayor knows that she can't fill it, and so he needs to play the political game, and I understand that. He's a really good guy. I actually like him, and I would back him, most likely, for this position, but he's not going to get it. So he finds himself in positions like this where he has to pretend that it raises concerns. It doesn't. He chided the Reverend Graham because he doesn't support the SPD's quote-unquote inclusive values. And then, of course, because you have to always do this in Seattle or anywhere, it's 2021, you have to be reminded that the department, quote, fully supports the equity and the just treatment of all people.
Equity.
Equity. So afterwards, Gonzalez put out another statement declaring victory with her official response. This time, though, a press release via her mayoral campaign Twitter feed, not her actual other account. How weird is that? Now, I'm not shocked that Lorena Gonzalez would be outraged by a law enforcement appreciation event. That doesn't shock me. I expect that. She is one of the leading and destructive anti-police voices in the city of Seattle. And if she were to be elected mayor, God forbid, that summer of love that we experienced last year would be extended throughout the entire year. It is less shocking that she would exploit this evangelical angle to make this about offending the LGBTQ community. She will pander to any group when she needs votes. That's what she does. She's running for mayor. Politicians pander. This is not a difficult thing to see through. However, I do think it is, in fact, shocking that she has the audacity to feign concern over gay officers. She doesn't care about LGBTQ staff members at the SPD. She doesn't care about them. She says they might feel alienated by the event. Oh, really? You care? Now, maybe they would. Perhaps they would. I have no idea. But she doesn't have any concern over the feelings of any officers. She's not just trying to defund the police by 50%. Remember, she is trying to fire police officers on the basis of their race. But we're now supposed to pretend that she cares about the feelings of any of the officers? To claim that, oh, it might undermine Seattle's LGBTQ community. Look in a mirror, Congresswoman. Or excuse me, oh, God forbid. Look in a mirror, council member. Look literally in a mirror at the things you have done. You defunded the police, which means less resources fighting crimes that impact the LGBTQ community. And those very same gay and lesbian officers that you claim to support, guess what? You're going to fire them. You're actively trying to fire them with your defunding efforts. But I guess your concern doesn't extend to their ability to pay rent or afford childcare or afford health care. For someone who is suddenly an ally of the LGBTQ community, it's just really weird because just a few months ago, you backed a resolution praising Cuba while attacking the United States. Guess what? In Cuba, gay marriage is illegal. In fact, after canceling a gay pride march, in Cuba, guess what happened? They did it anyway. Guess what the Cuban government did? They decided to go ahead and make a whole bunch of arrests. Because in Cuba, you don't have rights. Gonzalez says she supports a ban on conversion therapy, which is alive and well in Cuba. You backed Cuba over the United States. You praised them over the United States because you wanted to get some extra points amongst the crazy communist, socialist, progressive crowd in Seattle. I guess you're willing to push aside your allyship with the LGBTQ community in order to sign on to a Cuba-supporting resolution, because maybe it would help you politically. And then finally, let's talk just briefly about this potential for religious discrimination in policing. God forbid, you sent out this one particular link to a religious event, it might send the message that you're not going to police anyone except evangelicals, which is, of course, a remarkably stupid position to take. But let's go with that logic for a moment, because 2 days before that link went out, you know what else the SPD wellness unit sent out? They sent out an email about Ramadan. They explained what it is. They gave historical context. They even explained how you can greet members of the Muslim community during Ramadan. Using that logic, should we now assume that the police will only support members of the Muslim community? That's your stupid logic. Oh, no, you wouldn't ever say that because it's stupid, because you would never want to dismiss, potentially, Muslims or even be seen as that. But you will dismiss the evangelicals. Now, the Reverend Graham actually sent me a statement via email that I've got up on our blog. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the story, not just for you to read, but to post it everywhere. Let's call her out. She's running for mayor. She would be a disaster. She now all of a sudden is pretending to care about the feelings of cops. She does not care. She never has. She never will. Don't fall for this bad faith press release, please. Text the keyword RANTS, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you a link to the blog. I was going to say the blage, because that's blog and page into one word.
You're so innovative and witty, Jason.
Or I fumbled the words.
Idiot.
I was of two. Shut up.
Dum-dum. How do you like it?
It's funny. It's cute when people say dum-dum. I think it's adorable. You dum-dum. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
A gay professor is suing Seattle Pacific University because he says they denied him a full-time job because he's gay. And as a result, students and professors are now rallying in support of him. His name is Joe Rindle. He told Cairo 7 TV that he applied for a full-time position in the nursing program last summer over at SPU, but he got called into the dean's office and was told, no.
She said, well, the problem is you're not heterosexual. And I just sort of froze at this point while I sort of got a little nauseated.
Especially for nursing? I thought that was a requirement. Don't give me that. Well, that was a good joke. I'm kidding. Shut up. You're awful. I'm kidding. Now, his lawsuit says the school committed an illegal act of discrimination against him, all based on his sexual orientation. Now, the school's saying, no, actually, that's not the case. We can do this.
They don't have the right to judge me, number one, because my employer has no business in my bedroom.
They're not in your bedroom, but they absolutely do have the right to do what they did. You may not like it. I wouldn't either. But they can do this in this case because this is a private Christian school. They have an affiliation with the Methodist Church. And it's that affiliation and that private status here as a religious school that does give them this right. Employees, before they take on a job, they are told that they have to abide by the conduct standards in the employee handbook. That employee handbook is a form of a contract. Now, a part of that handbook includes having to live up to traditional views of marriage between a man and a woman. Now, presumably, the professor knew that or should have known that. But he took the job anyway when he started to work there. But now he disagrees with their position on full-time employment. He doesn't like the religious convictions that are at work here, so he's suing.
It's time that we understand that Christianity is about loving and embracing. It's not about division and separation and hatred and anger.
And perhaps his moral point is the correct one, right? I mean, I certainly agree with his point. I wouldn't hold this against him. But he's going to lose this case. Legally speaking, he is in the wrong. That said, he could still change minds, right? You can still speak up and change minds. You can maybe get more faculty and students to build pressure on the school board of trustees to change their position here. Because just last week, I believe it was last Monday, the trustees voted to keep those conduct expectations in place. And as a result, students and faculty said, wait a minute, we don't like this. Right now, apparently the faculty are getting together considering a vote of no confidence. All because of what this professor has done taking this position. So there is some potential societal change campus-wide that could take place. You've got people like Laur Lugos, a junior over at SPU, talking with King 5, saying this.
I'm embarrassed to say that I go to school here when I hear the way that this school treats the LGBT community.
Okay, so I am assuming that you're going to leave.
I was angry. I don't enjoy being a student at a university that upholds homophobic values.
Okay, again, you also knew the values going into a Christian school, a Methodist school. You knew that going in. So you made that choice. I would not have made that choice knowing their position. Granted, a 17-year-old who makes a decision to go to a school may not be all read up on different policies. I understand that. But now as a 19, 20-year-old, you get to make the choice to go somewhere else. We'll see if she does. Just like the professor can make the choice to go somewhere else if they do not like the reality on the ground. He's going to lose this, even though I think from a moral standpoint, I agree with him. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So Dr. Fauci was on Meet the Press, and he gave a maddening answer when pressed about why people should wear a mask after being vaccinated.
This is something that as we get more information, it's going to be pulling back that you won't have to. But currently the reason is that when you get vaccinated, you are clearly diminishing dramatically your risk of getting infected. That's one of the things we got to make sure everybody understands. You dramatically diminish it. However,
And by the way, dramatically, that sounds, in a word, dramatic. That's good.
What happens is that you might get infected and get absolutely no symptoms.
Okay, by the way, again, that's good, right? I mean, we'd prefer you no one get infected. But if you're going to get infected with a disease, a virus, and have literally no symptoms, I'd prefer that aspect.
Much
to it,
more
right?
enjoyable.
Okay, continue, because right now I'm not hearing a downside to taking off the mask.
Not know you're infected.
Okay.
And then inadvertently go into a situation with vulnerable people, and if you don't have a mask, you might inadvertently infect them.
Why aren't they wearing a mask? Shouldn't they be wearing a mask? Doesn't the mask protect one from getting COVID? That's what he said this entire time. Well, I mean, except for the first couple months where he said, don't wear a mask, it doesn't do anything. But then when he switched it, I believe a mask helps to stop the spread of this virus, because anything that covers essentially point of entry into one's mouth or nose, same thing with putting glasses on, anything that prevents some of the speckles of COVID from getting inside of you has an impact, a positive one. Is it perfect? No. Does it make sense that it can help prevent it? Yes, it does. Anyone who says otherwise doesn't know what they're talking about. Why then would you have to wear a mask when you are fully vaccinated to protect other people when they are wearing a mask? I saw the memes. Are you telling me the memes are wrong? About the small percentage of likelihood of someone with a mask wearing it properly getting COVID?
Jason, memes are never
wrong. Memes don't lie.
Now, there's a small risk of that,
small
but it's
risk.
There.
Okay, so a small risk. We are always going to then have a small risk. That risk is never going to go away unless you are able to fully cure and then eradicate the coronavirus. So we're going to have to take some risks. We're going to have to take some risks. The flu, as you know, is deadly for some people. Right? We know that. I told this. My father died of the flu. It is deadly for some people. We still take risks. Because we judge the likelihood of that risk leading to certain death or certain outcomes. We mitigate around it. The same way we risk getting into a car accident that is fatal every time we get into a car or walk across the street and risk getting hit by a bus. Doesn't happen very often. It can happen. It sometimes does happen. We do it anyway. We mitigate. We look both ways. We do things smartly. And yet when it comes to the coronavirus, with a high rate of successful treatment and survival, we can't take even the smallest of small risks. Does that make any sense to anyone? Seriously. And it's he's making me feel like one of the kooks.
Well, you are a kook.
But not on this.
Not on this, no, but you are.
But not, I like the Kooks, the band. That's one of my favorites. I like them. 1-800-465-8770.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the time of the show where we completely ignore the city of Seattle because the media is already hyper-focused on Seattle. We spend all of our time talking about the communities you live in, the communities you care about most. And we start in Lacey because their 12U Little League team, they've been forced to cancel its trip to Cooperstown, New York, where they were going to play in a tournament because they got a letter that says you have to get a COVID-19 vaccine if you want to attend. Huh. Do you know what the problem is?
You can't force people to get vaccines, Jason.
No, that's not the problem.
Oh, that's not the problem?
No. Give you one more hint. A 12U Little League.
They only have 11 vaccines to give out.
No.
But there's 12U of them.
No. That's the age of the kids.
Oh, they're 12-year-olds?
How old do you have to be to get the vaccine? Because they haven't done all the testing.
You gotta be 16.
Yeah.
They're 12.
Yeah.
Is the tournament in 4 years?
No.
Oh.
It's coming up pretty soon. The vaccine is only available to ages 16 plus. And yet, in this case, you've got them saying, no, you gotta get it if over the age of 12. So Tasha is a mom of one of the players, spoke with Dory Monson on our sister station, Cairo Radio.
You know, as it was getting closer, we've made arrangements. Everybody got their houses and their airline tickets and cars. And then we just got a letter from them on Saturday, I believe, from the Cooperstown program that just said the only way that you can continue to play is if all 12-year-olds are vaccinated.
She said her immediate reaction was confusion. There's been no COVID vaccine approved by the FDA for the use in children. They don't need it on top of it.
Super disappointed, especially for the boys, and anger. I mean, yeah, we were really mad because it just feels like they're just setting us up for failure when that, you know, you can't get a 12-year-old vaccinated right now.
This is so ridiculous. And so the kid, his name is Beckett, but he's only 12 years old, so he doesn't provide a very good answer.
Well, I was disappointed, and like, because they have to make us get a vaccine to even play, and I was just mad.
You said that.
Disappointed.
No, you said disappointed twice, and you said mad, which is...
He needed to make sure that you know that he is both mad, disappointed, and also disappointed.
Yeah, so...
He might be mad, too.
That means disappointed. They're all the same.
Do you think he was angry?
I mean, maybe livid.
He might have been livid. Yeah. Outraged a little bit in there, too?
Maybe just a little bit. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. God bless him. I went to the Cooperstown Dream Park website, and just, I was like, am I missing something? Are they doing something weird here that maybe the team doesn't understand? Like, no, they just doesn't make any sense. It says, registered visiting family members 12 years and older are required to provide proof of COVID-19 vaccination to gain entry. That's not all, by the way. They say 12 years old and older must be immunized. Immunization requirements are as follows. COVID-19, campers under 12 years of age are exempt, but must provide a negative test upon arrival. Diphtheria, influenza, Hep B, measles, mumps, rubella, poly, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what that one is. Tetanus, varicella, it's chickenpox. Just every, oh my gosh. Are they all sickly, these kids?
I don't know. Or like it's just a tournament for doctors where they're all just trying to get a bunch of shots.
Like, hey, I mean, most of this stuff, I guess, you would already get by the age of 12, except... Do you get hepatitis B? Because I don't know. And diphtheria? I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't been 12 in a while.
I imagine some of the stuff is before you're 12. I know, like, the chickenpox vaccine is young. I've heard of rubella, which I thought... Rubella? Which I thought was the mumps. What am I thinking of? What's the other term for mumps? 1-800-465-877. Join the conversation.
I'm no medical expert here.
Cooperstown Dreams Park is hopeful that the vaccines will be available a minimum of 21 days prior to any registration date. Cooperstown Dreams Park will, if necessary, modify registration date by registration date until a vaccine is available for 12 years old and older. So you could literally be waiting a year to just keep on pushing the registration date until one's available. Okay. So they just can't. They're like, yeah, no, we're out. And, you know, in fairness, you don't want to go to Cooperstown anyway. I get they've got the Baseball Hall of Fame, but that's all that they have.
You're speaking to the wrong crowd.
But that's all they have.
Yeah, but that's what makes it cool. Ugh, I could spend three days there and never get bored.
Could a 12-year-old?
Probably, yeah.
No. They don't know who Mickey Mantle is.
Yeah, but then they learn. It's a cool museum.
No, they don't want
to
learn.
It's a museum that you actually want to go to.
No.
And then there's all the little shops up and down Main Street. Yeah. Cooperstown is cool.
Cooperstown is just a tourist trap.
Oh, that was such a good trip.
Seattle Times is mad that the city of Auburn is doing something about their out-of-control homelessness crisis, so they put a former Stranger blogger on the case, Sydney Brownstone. I get the whole idea of hiring people with political opinions. I have no problem with that. But they're not telling them to chill out with the political opinions. They're just letting them lean into it while simultaneously pretending to be an objective news source. The Seattle Times is not an objective news source. Their news writers have opinions. I'm of the point at the have an opinion. I'd go for it. Just stop pretending otherwise. That's all. Stop pretending to be objective when you very clearly have narratives that you're pushing forward and talking points that you've adopted and end results that you want. I don't care. I have opinions. I literally make a living giving my opinion. Stop pretending to be objective, nonpartisan reporters. Just stop it. Sydney Brownstone is not that. But the Seattle Times wants you to think it. But when you read her stuff, it's very clear where she stands. They are upset. You see, Auburn used to have a criminal penalty on the books that banned camping on public property. They got rid of it about, I want to say, 7 months ago or so, maybe a little bit more than that. And they change it to a civil fine of $250 instead. Well, guess what happened when they got rid of the criminal penalty? Oh, boy. A surge of homeless campers everywhere.
Can't say surge.
I will say surge on this show.
AOC is going to come after you.
And I will say homeless people, not people experiencing homelessness. Homeless camping exploded. So now the council today... in the next couple hours, will vote on whether or not they're going to bring back their old criminal penalty. So if you camp on public property, you're going to be hit with a $1,000 fine and or 90 days in jail. However, it would only apply if there are no shelters available. If there are shelters available within the city, you have to go there. If there are some shelters available nearby, the city will pay for you to be transported there. They're doing this for a very clear and obvious reason: safety. The health and safety of the homeless person and the safety of the community. Now, here's the name of the Seattle Times article. Auburn's proposal to change civil fee to criminal charge is not, quote unquote, criminalizing homelessness, says officials. So they're framing it already. And this is why. They quote someone by the name of Allison Ezinger. She's the executive director of the Seattle King County Coalition on Homelessness. She's quoted in this piece as saying, in reality, this piece of legislation is literally making criminal the condition of being too poor to have a home. No, it's not. No, it's not. What it is literally doing, because I actually literally know what literally means, is making it illegal to camp out on public property when there is other places for you to sleep. I know you do not like that. You don't have to like it, and we can have an honest debate about that, and we can do so in good faith. The whole talking point of criminalizing homelessness, criminalizing the poor, that is a stupid talking point that lazy, stupid people use who can't otherwise win arguments. You do that because you think that somehow it makes you come off as a hero. You're fighting for the poor. You are a hero, except you're not. You're actually making it so the poor stay poor. You have no problem having people sleep out in a park somewhere. I do have a problem with that. I want them inside in a shelter because in that shelter, they will almost certainly have access to, guess what? Running water. Heat. And like electricity in general. Oh, and that whole thing about resources so they can maybe get their life on the right path. You, on the other hand, Allison Ezinger, you want them sleeping out in a park surrounded by waste, surrounded by danger, without access to running water, a bathroom, a shower, without access to what you take for granted. Or what you tell me I take for granted. You don't, of course. She says, over and over again, the question that these kinds of proposals fail to answer is, where else can people be? In shelters. Dum-dum. It literally in shelters. Did you read the law that you're claiming is criminalizing the homeless? Now, Nancy Backus, the mayor of Auburn, said, we have a compassionate continuum of care that we're providing in Auburn. It's not this horrible narrative that some are choosing to use about criminalizing homelessness. That's the last thing we want to do. Correct. That's the last thing anyone wants to do. But sometimes you need to have some teeth to your proposals. Otherwise, people take advantage of you. People are resistant to getting off the streets. So you do sometimes need to have the ability to punish. It creates a disincentive. People like Allison Ezinger and Sidney Brownstone over the Times want to pretend that they don't understand that. You're criminalizing homelessness. I wish we could criminalize bad faith arguments and stupid. But unfortunately, we can't.
Our jails would be overrun.
We wouldn't have a hometown newspaper. Or half of the TV station. Well, we'd have like two reporters. Brandy Cruz would stay. And one other who I'm not going to name because I want all the reporters to fight amongst each other to see who they think it is.
Sounds like there's a few job openings.
Gosh. No, because the editors and all the hiring managers, they'd be in jail too. They're the ones who put these dum-dums in positions of power to begin with.
You're probably the worst person to play The Sims with.
Oh, you'd all be in jail. It'd be so fun. It's not going to be called The Sims anymore. It's The Tyrant. 1-800-465-8770. Back to the Jason Rantz Show. The Guardian reports that a data breach at a crowdfunding website showed that police officers and paramedics, at least one, donated money to Kyle Rittenhouse. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. This is actually kind of nuts. There was a donation made by a sergeant for $25. Wait, is that... Do we leave off a few...
$2,500?
No, it says $25. Was it stolen, the money?
It must have been. There's no... That would make this news, right?
Hold on. No, it's... Is he on... Was he investigating the... No? He's from Virginia.
Oh, fake money. Was it like counterfeit dollar bills?
No, he just donated it to help him on his defense fund. Okay, let me keep reading. Sorry, guys. Sometimes I do this stuff live, and I don't do the show prep. I'm assuming there's going to be some news. Don't worry. There's going to be something newsworthy here. Another Rittenhouse donor using an official email address was Craig Shepard, who public records show is a paramedic in Utah. Can you check Wikipedia on this one? Do they elect paramedics?
No, they're just hired.
This is a random... Okay.
Standard job.
This donor gave
$10? $10,000.
Well, I mean, even if he gave $10,000, I don't know if that's a news story, but it's just...
Well, maybe they wanted to praise him for donating $10,000 to a cause.
I don't know. $10. I mean, can someone send in a third-rate investigative reporter? I mean, this is breaking... So, they really did that?
Oh, you betcha.
Jason Wynn from ABC in Salt Lake.
The Guardian first reporting Friday morning a Utah paramedic donated to a defense fund for Kyle Rittenhouse. The Guardian reports this donor gave $10 to Rittenhouse on the 30th of August. That was 5 days after police say Rittenhouse shot and killed two protesters in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Rittenhouse seen here with his hands up as police moved past him. Officers say he then made his way home to Illinois before authorities made an arrest, charging him with homicide. Okay. Rittenhouse says he was in Wisconsin to help protect property as others protested the death of Jacob Blake. I went to Shepard's home to get his side of things, but those inside the home didn't want to talk.
Why did he go to the house?
He needed to make the knocking noise, I guess, for his news piece, quote-unquote news piece.
But a law wasn't broken. It was $10. This was an individual who's donating legally to a defense cause. And you're going to the guy's house. Usually in local news, they relegate that kind of stuff to a politician who's crooked or, you know, sleeping with a secretary. Sometimes you'll do that with the local sex offender who just moved in.
Right? Jason, 2021, it's equity. Everyone gets a news reporter to their house over the smallest of news stories.
Does Jason Wynn get anything? He brings shame to the name Jason. I thought there was already enough shame. This dude on Twitter posted a photo of this guy's front porch as he's going into his home. Okay? BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors. There was a New York Post article about her spending millions as an anti-capitalist Marxist on buying property. That was deemed a violation to post that got Jason Whitlock's Twitter feed pulled. But this dude is still on Twitter. How did this make it on air? Seriously, this guy is getting ripped to shreds. Getting completely torn apart. I am somewhat shocked, frankly, at the level of ratioing that he received. Because he's got two tweets up and they both got ratioed to heck. The first one that I responded to that got picked up by The Blaze and Fox and a whole bunch of others, it has only 489 hearts. That's with the photo of the guy, the paramedic going into his home. It has over 13,200 comments. All of them are bad.
That's a good ratio.
Three of them are me. Five of them are me, fine.
You spent five tweets on this guy?
I'm pretty disgusted, especially, by the way, the current vice president of the United States raised money for a bail fund that released accused murderers and rapists. Even after that news came out, the link remained up on her Twitter feed. But this dude gave $10 to one specific individual who has a very valid defense case, according to all the facts that we have so far. And we sent a third-rate investigative reporter to his home.